to listen to Lindy talk about drinking with Gilbert and George. We have a drink stand at the back. Do help yourselves in the spirit of the talk to a drink during it, if you'd like to. We should probably do emergency exit, so the emergency exit, if there's any reason to, is just out the door you came in. We hope you enjoy the talk and get a bit more insight into Linda's experience of Gilbert and George.
Okay, that's the full title, Drinking with Gilbert and George, 1972 to 76. I wrote this about 5, 6, 7 years ago for the Art Historians Conference in Edinburgh, and it was deliberately done within that context as a very serious art historical lecture. But it was based on the fact that I did spend the years 1972 to 76 drinking quite a lot with Gilbert and George and dancing with them. Which one do I press first? Oh, yeah, I'm just straight in. Right. It is quite long, so I hope that's okay. It lasts about an hour. I saw Gilbert and George in November 1999 for the first time since the premiere of their film A Day in the Life of Gilbert and George on Thursday the 29th of October 1982. I still had the invitation to the after party. That was 17 years earlier. I could see they thought I'd grown old and fat, and so I apologised. I'm an old lady now. And George immediately quipped back, "We're all old ladies now." He then touched my arm and said, "You know you are our dark lady." And I liked very much the idea of being Gilbert and George's dark lady, and I started to think about the story. I still had my diaries from this period, which are little more than a record of appointments, but I'd also kept a journal at that time about a love affair, and Gilbert and George were the Cupids who encouraged that relationship. I first saw Gilbert and George at the opening of When Attitudes Become Form at the ICA in midsummer 1969. They had metallic pastel paints on their hands and faces. When Attitudes Become Form was the time of my life. It was an exhibition about artists, young artists, not objects in packing cases. Conrad Fisher was there directing the installation, working alongside the artists, while Harold Zeman and Charles Harrison took the credit. The installation teams became the regular roadies for the Rolling Stones the following year, and I loved that juxtaposition of conceptualism at that moment in time and the Rolling Stones and all their... that's meant by that. They also did Crosby, Stills, Nash and Young, which some people find more impressive. One spring Sunday morning in 1971, they walked past the house where I lived on City Road near the Angel as I ate a late breakfast on the balcony. I left the ICA and went to work for Nigel Greenwood in Sloane Gardens in July 1971, and I started to see Gilbert and George regularly. Nigel said they were shy, and that's why they drank so much. That's Nigel Greenwood with the American artist Barry LeVay. Brenda Lukey, who did a lot of work with... Derek Jarman, and that's me on the phone and a Keith Milo painting in the background. And I think this is one of the first things that I started to collect of Gilbert and George, the leaflet To Be With Art Is All We Ask from 1970. It was around this time that the photograph of them by Lord Snowden in the 10th of January issue of the Sunday Times, 1971. And two of the earliest invites, the singing sculpture at Nigel Greenwood's and the paintings at the Whitechapel Art Gallery, which is also signed by Gilbert and George. And, you know, you can see how easily one got addicted to wanting to collect these beautiful things. This is the invitation that Gilbert and George did from their video called In the Shrubberies by Gerry Schoen, the German TV producer who started to make films with artists. And it was used on the card for the new art show at the Hayward Gallery in August. And this was the installation called In the Shrubberies in that main entrance hall. This is in 1972 at the Hayward. For the new art show at the Hayward in August 72, they made two charcoal murals of the shrubberies on paper aged like parchment around two walls of the vast first room. A still taken at the time of Gerry Schoen's first Gilbert and George video. In the Shrubberies was also the invitation, and it was a huge party at the Hayward on a golden summer day with the bar outside on the balcony open till 9 p.m. The exhibition was organised by Anne Seymour, who a couple of years later became Mrs. Anthony Dauphé in 1978. But she was then an assistant keeper at the Tate. She'd been brought up part of her childhood in Cologne, where her father ran the British Council office. Her assistant on the new art show was a young art officer at the Arts Council, Nicholas Sirota, son of the Labour ombudswoman, Baroness Sirota, the local politician credited with winning Hampstead for the Wilson government. I wrote about Sirota's early career for Studio International in November 1975 in an article on the Museum of Modern Art and his work there in Oxford. The new art brought together the internationally known conceptual artists from England. It was Gilbert and George, Richard Long, Hamish Fulton, Keith Arnott, Art and Language, Victor Bergin, Barry Flanagan and David Tremlett, with a less known group of artists who were based in London but who had less of an international profile. They were Michael Craig Martin, David Dye, John Hilliard, John Stesica, Keith Milo and Gerald Newman. The exhibition took place in the shadow of the internationalism of Documenta 5. And London seemed very provincial, showing only British artists, when Documenta brought together the best of the American and European artists of that period. But even if the new art show was a bit provincial, it was still important enough for some major dealers to turn up in London for the opening, including Leo Castelli, his wife Ileana Sonnebend, Conrad Fisher, Gerry Schoen, and Adriaan van Ravenstein from Art and Project in Amsterdam. After the opening, Gilbert and George, the dealers and friends, went to the upstairs bar at the Salisbury in Cambridge Circus, Anthony Caro's old St. Martin's haunt. At closing time, we went off to a nightclub just off Carnaby Street called the DOK. There were few places to drink in London in those days. After closing time, the club was very seedy in a dark basement with a low ceiling, and because of the licensing laws, the nightclubs had to provide food, and this was always a cardboard plate with a slice of liver sausage and a bit of salad. This was often the only food on a night out with Gilbert and George. Wednesday the 23rd of August 1972, a couple of days after the opening of the Hayward show. Those are Gary Shume's certificates for his videos of Gilbert and George. I don't know, I can read them all. Gordon's Makes Us Drunk is the first one, In the Bush, and then the portrait of the artists as young men. Princess Sylvia Guiri, one of Nigel Greenwood's circles, gave a party at her house in Elm Place, South Kensington, to say farewell to Keith Milo, who was off to New York on a Fulbright scholarship. Keith had once been part of a famous foursome with Mark Lancaster with Jasper Johns and Keith with Robert Rauschenberg. Sylvia once told us about her grandmother, whose marriage to Hugo von Hofmannsthal, and she was chaperoned on the journey from Paris to Vienna by none other than Marcel Proust. She had been brought up in California, and she was the first person I knew whose children were in psychoanalysis. Gary Shume was still in London preparing three new videos with Gilbert and George, and he arrived at the party with them. He was over 6 foot tall, with a shaved head and wore army surplus clothes, including canvas knee-high lace boots with his trousers tucked inside. Outside Sylvia's house was parked the van in which he lived. It was a very large white Mercedes lorry he'd converted into a glorified modernist automobile, a 70s version vision of Bauhaus logic. He had a bedroom over the cab. It had a shower, kitchen, and lounge office in which he could stand upright comfortably. It was also clean and austere and very German. Gary was certain video was the art form of the future, at a time when none of us even had a video player. Gary had made programs about artists for German TV, and he was trying to find a way to copyright his tapes and sell them as small editions, and the economics were not working out very well for the Gary Shume Video Gallery. Gilbert and George, Gary and I, went on the roof of the van to dance. The roof had a low rail round it, and we were having a great party until the neighbours in this very smart part of South Kensington raised their windows to shout at us. Regardless of quarantine, Gary had brought his Siamese cat with him from Dusseldorf. It had a cat litter tray in the bottom of the shower. The living quarters were also his workshop, with cameras and editing suites all pulling out from custom-built cupboards. A nice domestic touch was a flight of three real but dead stick insects, arranged in size as in a flight of plaster ducks across one of the walls. After the party, Gary drove Gilbert and George and I all round London, stopping at a green wooden taxi driver's cafe in the middle of the road near the V&A. It's gone now. And ending up for breakfast at 5 a.m. at the Market Cafe in Fournier Street with the traders from Spitalfields Fruit and Vegetable Market that was then still in operation in Spitalfields. Early September 1972, Alan Charlton had an exhibition at the Whitechapel Gallery. While he was a student at the Royal Academy Schools, Alan had read the interview with Conrad Fischer on his space in Dusseldorf in Studio International, February 1971. He sent off his slides to Conrad and had gone to Dusseldorf to visit him. In early September 1972, he arranged with Jenny Stein, then the director of the Whitechapel Gallery, to hang his paintings in the main Whitechapel space for a few days between exhibitions. He did this without any cost or inconvenience to the Whitechapel, hiring a van and getting friends to help him. There was no mailing and no opening, and only a handful of people saw the show. However, it gave him the opportunity to photograph his work in ideal conditions and then to be able to show in Europe within a year, reproduced in a catalogue of the Kunsthalle in Bern with the photographs of his Whitechapel show, in inverted commas. At the time, Conrad Fischer was the most influential dealer in Europe. That's him when he was still an artist and part of the group Capitalist Realism with Gerhard Richter and Sigmar Polk, and then he gave up as an artist himself to concentrate on his galleries. He was the first dealer to show Gilbert and George and Richard Long, and he acted as agent in England for many of the most important German and American artists. When he visited London, a lot of business would be done and there'd be a gathering of the tiny conceptual gang. Nigel Greenwood, Conrad Fischer, Gilbert and George and I all went to meet Alan at the Whitechapel on the Friday afternoon about 4 p.m. We then went back down Brick Lane to Fournier Street to wait for David Tremlett and John Dunbar, who was then very involved with conceptual art, Marianne Faithfull's ex-husband, who was then working for the British Council doing a conceptual touring show of South America. We all went on then to Ball's Brothers Bar near Commercial Road. The bar was sadly condemned for redevelopment. This is an image of the bar in the Australian catalogue for Gilbert and George's first visit to Australia the following year. It was an authentic late 19th century pub, functional with wood panels and leaded glass, a black and white tiled floor, and a few mottos, historic photographs, and priceless, all of which reappear in Gilbert and George's work of the period. They also loved the double entendre of the name Balls. The style was like a German stone house, the Stein houses, and with the gang of us, everyone got very drunk. It was the time of the 1972 Commonwealth Games, and we sat in the bar watching the boxing with George Quipping. I never realised there was so much art in sport before, or do I mean I never realised there was so much sport in art before? I pinched one of the Balls Brothers ashtrays as the bar was going to be knocked down, and I thought it was too good an evening to leave without a memento. Conrad Fischer tucked it into the back pouch of his wind cheater, which was a kind of German hunting jacket. We went for a meal and then back to Fournier Street, where the wind-up gramophone and Gilbert and George's collection of 78s came out. I taught everyone to do the hokey-cokey, knees bend, arms stretch, rah, 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 which was a favourite party piece in my family, weddings and things like that always ended with a hokey-cokey. This delighted Conrad, who renamed it the okey-dokey, which was his catchphrase. The ashtray had been forgotten until it set off all the alarms at Heathrow when he tried to fly back to Dusseldorf. It was the height of the hijackings and security guards had marched him off. He told me later he kept the ashtray to remember this evening, so I never got it. He loved his evenings with Gilbert and George. In fact, Conrad loved Gilbert and George. This is the exhibition at Nigel Greenwood's gallery of Gilbert and George's Balls Brothers, the big one. Balls was bought by the Tate Gallery. Gilbert and George had shown their first photo pieces with Conrad in Dusseldorf and with Art and Project in Amsterdam in 1971. Gilbert and George were innovators in showing photographs as art at a time when the Tate didn't really accept photography as art. The idea of grouping multiple images of a single subject, often of a single instant of a single subject, each behind glass and framed individually in passepartout, was developed by them, and it's become such a staple of presentation that their innovations have been overlooked. Gilbert and George had been encouraged to make large-scale photo presentations by Conrad, and their early work had been small-scale documents using drawings. One of the other artists at Nigel Greenwood's, David Lemelis, an Argentine artist living in Europe at that time, had made this film in which he got me to star. A version of it is at the back there. So Saturday the 12th of November 1972, to Fournier Street to meet Gilbert and George, and then to Ball's Brothers with Conrad Fisher, who'd just arrived in London from staying with Bruce Nauman in New Mexico, who had given him to wear a ridiculous baseball cap. He was in London to see Anne Seymour, still working at the Tate, who'd arranged to buy a work by Richard Long for the Tate collection. And to buy it, which was very innovative at this time, not from an English dealer, but from a German dealer. And Conrad was very proud of this sale. Conrad had arranged to open a second gallery with Gian Enzo Spironi in Rome, and he wanted Gilbert and George to make the opening show. We ate a curry in Brick Lane and then went on a pub crawl, first to a sad, dark, empty striptease bar where a young girl danced on a triangular stage in the corner of the room to flashing disco lights. She took off her bra as the music reached its climax. She then dropped her breasts back into her bra and sat on a stool in the deserted bar until it was time to dance again. It was really seedy. This silenced us, and we made our way to another pub where there was a talent evening with locals crooning Elvis to their heart's content. We finished up at the King's Head in Islington, where I sometimes worked as a barmaid, so we could drink after hours, and then we went to an all-night showing of two horror films, Wasp Woman and The Fly, at the Screen on the Green. Monday the 20th of November 1972, Gilbert and George opened three exhibitions simultaneously on the same day. Gilbert and George were innovators in showing photography as art. I've said all that already, haven't I?